If you want to know what is really happening in the world today, you need to read the Parsha HaShavua, the weekly Torah reading. Join Rabbi Mendel Lipska for the next hour as he delves and enumerates the themes running through the weekly Torah Parsha, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
And a wonderful Erev Shabbos to all of you. Great to be with you. To talk about the Parsha of the week, to talk about what in fact is important, what in fact we have to concentrate on, what in fact we have to see within God's creation. And particularly in the times that we live in now, it's a dangerous time, an uncertain time, a time that we need clarity and we need God's infinite benevolence to ensure that we continue in a good and positive way as a proud and strong Jewish people. We've been challenged throughout history so many times, and we survive, not only survive, but we thrive as a result of those challenges. And please God, the challenges that we're experiencing currently will also be something which brings greater strength, greater pride, greater purpose to the Jewish people. And this is why we look to the Torah. We look to the Torah for that clarity, for that purpose, because Torah is infinite, the word and wisdom of God that helps us walk through the challenges and difficulties of life generally, and particularly our own. It's an important parsha. Of course, every Shabbos is important. Every Shabbos comes after 6 days of the week, days of the week which somehow symbolize darkness, whereas Shabbos is a time of light. Every Shabbos is a time of blessing and greatness. But the Shabbos is important because it has a name, and the name of this parsha is, of this Shabbos, is Shabbat Chazan, the Shabbos of the vision. Which vision was that? That was the vision of Yeshayahu, Isaiah the prophet. This is the third of the 3 weeks of punishing Haftarat. And of course, this one comes not from the book of Jeremiah, but from the book of Isaiah. Now, Isaiah is normally connected with and represented of redemption, joy, happiness. And yet this particular Haftarah that comes from Isaiah is very different. It is a rebuke. It is a strong rebuke against the people. It's a strong rebuke against their behavior. And the language that he uses is almost frightening because it talks about terrible, terrible disaster and a complete disassociation almost between the Jewish people and God. He speaks about rebels. He speaks about my children have betrayed me. He uses terminology that is quite disturbing. And it's important to point out that Yeshayahu is the first of the later prophets. The first prophets, of course, the book of Joshua, the book of Judges, and the book of Samuel. But with Isaiah begins the later prophets. And one of the fundamental differences between the first three, the early prophets, and the later prophets, is that the language of the early prophets was very clear and concise, the word of God. Whereas the prophecy of the later prophets is far more flowery. It talks about terms in poetic dimension. It talks about language that has to be understood and interpreted, can't be taken literally. It cannot be taken. It's a simple translation. It has to be understood for the deeper and more powerful meaning that those prophecies contain. And Isaiah is one, the very first of those prophets to use this particular language structure to convey to his people in the name of God. And it's also the Shabbos that we begin in the book of Dvarim, the Parsha of Dvarim. And as mentioned last week, an important transition from last week. It's a shift in the tone and language and structure of the Torah, whereas the first four books have a particular style. Devarim is decidedly different, but we'll talk about that a bit later. Shabbos Chazon. Shabbos Chazon is the Shabbos of the vision. And this Haftarah is always read, Parshas Devarim is always read in the Shabbos preceding Tisha B'Av, the ninth of the saddest day in the Jewish calendar, a day that we remember and commemorate the destruction of the people, the destruction of the temple, and the exile of the people. And we listen to the words of Isaiah, and he says, Chazon, It's a vision. Because interestingly enough, Isaiah lived just over 150 years before the destruction. And when we look at the type of society in which he preached and prophesied, it begs the question, because there were a lot of academies of study. People were bringing sacrifices to the temple. The temple was standing. It was a time of great glory for the Jewish people. It was a time of great glory for the holiness of the Jewish people. And yet, what does Isaiah tell us? Look into the future, look to the destruction. Why does he say that? Why does that become important? And our commentaries tell us at great length that although on a superficial level, the society in which Isaiah lived was a pious and decent society, but beneath the surface, it wasn't anything like that. The piety was weak, the sincerity wasn't there. And this is why he had to admonish them. He had to talk to them about what, in fact, God forbid, might happen and will happen, the destruction of the temple. You know, we spoke about the month of Av is connected with hearing. And in hearing, it takes concentration. There's hearing, there's listening. When you hear something, you have to consider it. You have to concentrate on it in order for you to understand really what you are hearing. And this is why when he speaks about listen to me and listen heaven, hear earth, he talks about listening. But listening, as we said, is different than seeing, because seeing is instant. You don't need much concentration. But nonetheless, in the word chazon, which means look, we begin to understand that even in seeing, there is superficial sight and sight which goes far, far deeper. We can take a look at events. We can take a look at what we call reality. And we realize that it's one particular type of developing story. But when we dig deeper and we look beneath the surface, beneath the obvious, what we see is an altogether different type of structure. We see things differently. We see things differently to the sense that what we have seen up to now is not real, not real as far as we are concerned. It is superficial. And this is what Isaiah is telling us. He's not only telling us, look to the future for the destruction, but look beneath your own society right now. Strip away the superficial facade. Try to understand the inner dimensions of what's happening. Is it only external, or is there something internal to back it up? The piety, the holiness, the study, the respect for the temple. And this is what the parsha of Chazon, the Haftarah, that we'll talk about later, speak to us. It means Chazon, vision, beyond and beyond the obvious. And this is why we speak about these days should be transformed into days of joy and festivity. Because in order to transform something, you need to have at the core, that which you want to be transformed into. You can't transform something that doesn't possess that which you want to be transformed. And this is why he speaks to us about transforming these days of sorrow and sadness, which is at the core, they possess the idea of joy and festivity. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 High FM.
And I hope you listened carefully to the song that was just played. It speaks about we appeal to God Almighty to have mercy and to heal those who need healing, both spiritually and physically. And there are so many people out there who need a refuah shlema, full and speedy recovery. And we ask God that he sends it to his people quickly, fully, and with joy. We're talking about the time that we live in, the 9 days, a time of sorrow, a time of sadness, time that we have to understand the implications of what the Churban destruction was all about, the temple, the people, the tragedy of darkness descending upon the world. And this is why we have to look to the parshas mentioned earlier, because Parsha Devarim is always read before Tisha B'Av. And therefore, there's a very strong connection, obviously, between the Parsha and Tisha B'Av, and something that we have to look at and to understand. The first Tisha B'Av didn't happen in Israel. It happened in the wilderness, when the agents of spies came back and gave their terribly negative report, and the people allowed themselves to be influenced by the destructive negativity of the spies. And they stood in front of their homes crying, weakening their family, weakening the nation. No, we don't want to go into the promised land. Midrash tells us that God said, you're crying for nothing, but I'll give you something to cry about. And therefore, throughout history, Tisha B'Av has always been associated with events that causes us to cry. Destruction of the first temple, destruction of the second temple, the First World War breaking out, all sorts of tragedies historically happened around this particular time. But it began with crying for no purpose, complaining for no purpose. And God says, I will give you reason to cry, God forbid, as history has shown to be true. And this is why the book of Devarim, and not only the Parsha of Devarim, has something which is important for us to understand. And that is, we can do something about the exile that we live in. We can remedy it, we can change it, we can transform it, we can bring about tremendous aspects of freedom and liberation within our own lives, our people, and ultimately all of creation. And this is why we have to listen very carefully to the words of Moshe in the book of Devarim. And there's a fundamental difference, as I mentioned a number of times. In the book of Devarim, Moshe speaks in the first person, whereas in the first four books, he speaks in the name of God. He speaks in the first, well, not the first of the books, because he hasn't been born yet, but from the book of Exodus through the book of Numbers, he speaks directly using the words of God in the third person. Whereas in the book of Devarim, he speaks about, and I did this and I did that. I could no longer tolerate your complaining behavior. You caused me to, unfortunately, go through tremendous distress and difficulty in my leadership. He speaks in the first person. And when a person speaks in the first person, there is greater emphasis, there's greater stress upon that which he is saying. And one wonders, why was that necessary? The answer, of course, is he's speaking to the generation that is about to enter the promised land. And entering the promised land is a time of great blessing and opportunity, but it won't come easy. You have to battle against the nations who illegally took possession of the land. You have to battle against those enemies which are absolutely dedicated to the destruction of the people and not to allow the Holy Land to become a Jewish land. And therefore, he has to speak to them with strength, with power, in order to embolden them, in order for them to have the strength to go in and take possession of the land which God promised to the patriarchs and to each and every single Jew. And this is why the language that he uses and the words that he uses are incredibly interesting. He speaks about how the Jewish people went from place to place, but he doesn't use the actual names of the place. He uses a reference as to perhaps what happened in that place. And our sages tell us he's rebuking the people. He is telling them how badly they behaved so many times in the wilderness, and the cause and the consequence as a result. But he uses language which is gentle, uses language which doesn't openly rebuke them, because while he wants to tell them where they went wrong, he doesn't want to weaken their spirit at all. For instance, when he speaks about a place called Bidei Zahav, Rashi tells us, Zahav is gold. What happened over there? That's the place where the people sinned with gold, with the golden calf. He uses a word to describe a place by talking to us about a symbol that makes us understand what went wrong in that place. There's another point where he says he began to explain at this particular point, just before the people go into the promised land, he began to explain the entirety of Torah. In our commentaries, Rashi points out, he actually explained in 70 languages, 70 languages which represent the official 70 nations of the world. The question is, why was that necessary? Why would he want to talk about and write down the Torah in 70 languages for the nations of the world? And the obvious answer is because he wanted to make sure, number one, that no one would alter the Torah. No one would forge the Torah. Yes, there are religions that uses the Holy Torah as the base for their religion, but when you begin to examine what they have done with it, they've changed it, changed names, changed places, changed ideas. He says, I am recording the Torah in every single language, so that throughout history, nobody should make the mistake of changing the words of Torah. Yet they did, in order to satisfy their particular so-called religious needs. And the other answer, of course, is because the Jewish people have something to say to the nations of the world. As our prophet tells us, you have to be a light unto nations. And in order to be a light unto nations, you have to have the power of Torah. And it's important that the nations of the world recognize the strength of Torah that you possess. And not only that, but it also talks to us about reminding the nations of the world that they too have a tremendous obligation to God, the seven Noahide mitzvot commandments, the ethical moral system and faith system by which they must live. He does this just before the people go into the land because they're going to engage and encounter strong nations, often enemies, people who don't want the continuation of the Jewish people. Of course, we defend ourselves, and sometimes we have to act offensively as well. But at the same time, at all times, to remember that our real strength is the strength of Torah. It's the strength of the eternal word of God. And Moshe translates that into 70 language of the nations. He reviews the history of the Jewish people up to that point. But not only reviews. Reviewing is not enough. You have to relive the past. Experiences that you've gone through aren't lost, aren't gone. They exist. And when we are able to actually relive moments in our life, we get inspired, we have the ability of changing that reality, and we have the ability of bringing about something better for the present and the future. He's talking to them not only to give them historical facts of what happened over the past 40 years. He's talking to them about reliving that history and understanding the implications of every single moment, of every single place, of every single action, and what they can still do about it in their personal lives and as a people as well. And this is what the Parsha of Devarim is all about. As mentioned earlier on, the strength, the ability to transform something that is negative into something which is positive. We often talk about the idea of transforming darkness into light. Interesting, as our mystical teachers tell us. How can you possibly transform darkness into light? Isn't darkness the complete opposite of light? And the answer, of course, is yes, as it appears, it is the opposite of light. But deep within the darkness is a powerful light that can never shine because we cannot tolerate it in the limited state that we're in. And this is why it appears of darkness, but at its core, it's light. And this is something that we have to understand at all times. We have to know, to hear things properly, to listen properly, to see things properly, not to be overwhelmed only by that which appears, but also by that which exists beneath the surface, which is far more real very often. This is what this parsha of Devarim is all about. Moshe's personal words from God himself, but in the language it speaks in the first person. He says, I am pouring my heart out to you, that you have strength, nobility, as you come into the promised land. More of that soon.
This is the Parsha HaShavua with Rabbi Mendel Lipska, only on 101.9 Chai FM.
We're talking about transition into the Book of Devarim, the fact that it appears before Tisha B'Av, the saddest day of the year, and more importantly, what we can do about it. But before that, listen carefully. Thursdays and Fridays mean fresh magic at the family bakehouse. Golden challahs, babkas, biscuits, and cakes baked in small batches with no shortcuts. Perfect for Shabbat or the weekend. Find the family bakehouse at Genesis, Aurochs, and selected distribution centers. We talk about Shabbos Chazon, the Shabbos of the vision. And as mentioned earlier on, what was that vision? It was a sad vision. Although the Jewish people lived in great comfort, nonetheless, Yeshayahu Isaiah is talking to them about looking to the future and seeing the consequences of their particular behavior. And this is why sight is so important. Sight is important because, as our sages tell us, Ezehu Chacham, who is the wise man, the clever man, Haroeh es Hanolad, the one who sees the end result of his actions, the consequences of his behavior. Not who listens, but one who sees the consequences. Because it's important to understand that every action has some sort of result which can affect you personally, the people, the world. And this is why you have to be a chacham, you have to be wise and clever to understand, but more importantly, to see the end result and consequences of any type of behavior. And this is the Chazon Yeshayahu, the vision of Yeshayahu, not a very pleasant vision. Along comes the incredibly great sage, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, who tells us that there is a vision beyond the vision of destruction. And that is that every Shabbos Chazon, a Jew is potentially shown the third Beis HaMikdash, the one that will come with Mashiach and will remain eternally erect together with the people in the Holy Land. In other words, there is the vision of Isaiah, but you have to look beyond the vision of Isaiah as well. So he says, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. And the example that he gives is like a father who opens the closet and shows the child a beautiful new suit. And the father says, if you're deserving, you will get this beautiful new suit. You tore your first one. You turned your second one into rags. But if you will behave properly, you will receive this third suit of clothes. And the Hasidim asked the question, why does he use the example of a garment? Why not use the example of a house, where a house is shown to the people? After all, the Beis HaMikdash is called Beit HaMikdash, the house of holiness, the house of God. Why does he use the allegory of garments rather than a house? And the answer, of course, is partial answer anyways, that garments protect a person and a house, a home, protects a person. But there's a fundamental difference. Garments are tailored to the exact size of the individual. Too small, it won't fit. Too big, it becomes bulky and unwearable. A house is huge. It's not built to the size of the individual, as do garments. And what Rabbi Lichtenstein is telling us is look beyond the destruction and see the redemption and see the rebuilding of the temple, the third temple. But it's like a garment. A garment is tailored to the individual. There's a personal redemption. There's a redemption of the people. Each and every one of us has a tailor-made vision of how to understand what is, in fact, the great and glorious, ultimate end beginning of the Jewish people. It's like a garment. Yes, you can achieve to a certain degree personal redemption. And by so doing, not only have you saved yourself, but you contribute in a massive way to the redemption of all of Israel, of all in humankind, of all of creation. It's a personal thing which affects the general. And this is something which is so important for us to understand as we listen to the words of Isaiah. We have to remember, yes, he rebukes them severely with language which is completely not his, because his language generally is the language of redemption. He speaks of destruction because he wants us to understand how important it is for each and every one of us to do whatever he or she can in order to change the reality, to see that which exists beneath the surface. You know, a person might think, well, I'll change when the world changes. I'll change when society changes. No, you have to be instrumental in changing society, in turning society around. You have to be involved in the process of transforming these days of sadness into days of incredible joy and festivity. This is the reality that we see in front of us, but we have to go beyond and beyond, as I mentioned earlier on. The Shabbos, of course, is the Shabbos before Tisha B'Av. And God forbid, if Mashiach won't come Wednesday night, we take off our leather shoes, we sit close to the ground, we read the book of Eicha, the book of Eicha Lamentation. And this is something that we have to understand. Yes, a time of deep, profound sadness and sorrow. A 24-hour fast, actually more than 24 hours. It's a time that we remember that which we had and what we lost. And on the day of Tisha B'Av, Thursday, the keynote that we read, and we go through the historical tragedies that happened to the Jewish people, the frightening, horrific tragedy. But at the same time, Chazon Yeshayahu, look beyond, and you will see within the darkness, you will see a powerful light that can and will be revealed through our own efforts. As I often mention, Maimonides, who says, all it takes is one person doing one act at a particular time, which changes the balance of the entire world. And this is why it's a special Shabbos. It's a Shabbos that we have the blessing of seeing things differently, seeing things as they are in truth, not as they appear in front of us. What appears can often be disturbing and frightening. Look beneath, have the strength, not only to listen, not only to listen carefully and to hear as in fact you should, but see things as well as they should. So as I always say, when you're in shul tomorrow, listen carefully to the Parsha of Devarim. It's a fascinating Parsha. We're going to be introduced to Moshe's personal feelings. We're going to be introduced to the inner dimension of that great personality who, on every occasion, defends and protects his people. We're going to hear what he has to say on a great many different topics. Listen carefully. He tells Joshua at the end, be strong and take the people in. Be fearless. You have nothing to fear. God is with you. It's a parsha which is so full of interesting things. Listen carefully. There's something in it for you personally, just like a garment. And it's also a Shabbos of understanding the power of the individual. So listen carefully to the Haftarah. Isaiah tells us important things. It might be a bit uncomfortable to hear his rebuke, but go beyond the rebuke. Understand that both Moshe in this parsha and Isaiah speak in code, in parable. They speak with allegory. Listen not only to the words, but the inner dimension of the words, and you will see blessing. And something will resonate in the parsha, in the Haftarah, and it will make you stronger and more joyous and give you the ability to live life as you should. Good Shabbos.